Ramayana Kusha, they had they learned Ramayana from Valmiki, and Valmiki is that later on they killed a demon known as Lavanasura. Great sages, they approached Lavanasura Kusha for their support, for protection, for performing their sacrifices, and they killed this great demon called Lavanasura, and that is a big episode in the mentioned in Ramayana later. And this Sita Devi, while leaving this world, they said to Lavanakusha, and those words are there, that Sita Devi says to Lavanakusha that you should treat Valmiki as your father, that as much as affection, because it is he who has taken Ramchandra's role in bringing you up, and therefore you owe them, owe him, Valmiki, whatever he desires, you should carry out that, you should perform that activity. And therefore Lavanakusha were very loyal to Valmiki in the rest of their time.
Valmiki
the
same person
who
was previously a dacoit?
Yes. That it was a fall down. He was a Brahmana boy, but he had to become a dacoit for only one reason. And the story goes like this. When he was a sage's son, Valmiki was a Brahmana boy, learning the Shastra in a sage's ashram. So at that time, one Brahmana came to that ashram. And what happened was, that Brahmana by mistake in his dealings, he had to kill a cow. He didn't do it deliberately. Something happened and a cow got killed in that process. So being a Brahmana, he was conscious that the sinful activity, what he has done, was very, very required tremendous punishment. So he came to this sage's ashram where Valmiki was a brahmachari there, a brahmachari boy, he was there. When the Brahmana came, the sage was not present in the ashram. He has gone away. So Brahmana came in and he asked for the sage. And the brahmachari said to Brahmana, the sage has gone away on some business away. What's the matter? He said to the Brahmana. Brahmana said, what's the point in telling you? Because I don't know whether you can help me. He said, what happened? He said, I have by mistake killed a cow. So Brahmachari, our Brahmana Brahmachari said to him, that's not such a serious thing. Just chant the holy name of Lord Ramchandra four times. Rama 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 Rama. Four times if you chant, the reaction will go from for the sinful activity he has committed. Brahmana left the ashram and went away. After some time, the sage, his spiritual master, came back to the ashram. And by his divine vision, he knew what has happened. So he asked him, Brahmachari, who was our Valmiki in his previous birth, that what has happened, what happened when I was away? He said, one Brahmana came here and he complained that he told me that he has killed a cow, and because of that, he asked me what should be the atonement, prayaschittam, for that. So what did you tell him? He said. So I told him, you just chant the holy name four times, Rama Rama. He said, you chant four times, it should be all right. The sage told him that you have not understood the potency of the holy name. Why should he chant four times? One should have been enough. And because you didn't have that faith, you take the birth as a hunter, hunter's family. And that's how Valmiki had to take that birth. So that birth comes after this incident, as occurs from the from that sage. It is just in mentioned this only to show that if that holy name of Lord Ramchandra is chanted once even, it is such a powerful name that it can eradicate all the sinful reactions of any great sinful activity, provided it is chanted with that
attention
with that understanding.
Man, he fell down for killing only one cow. By Ramana Bhai, he fell down because of killing for one cow. Now what is become of us? Believe that from millions of sins.
I think it's better we don't discuss our situation, because it's only our sinful activities, what we all distress in this material world comes only from sinful life. There's no question about that. Sinful activities is the cause of distress in this world. And when we continue sinful life, that means we will have to accept all the sinful reactions coming from that. And that is why in Krishna consciousness and also in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in many, many instances, through different personalities, all the great sages are telling us that make your life purer and free from sinful life by acting in not free from I think in the Bhagavatam, in the second chapter, in the first canto itself, it says there, Shriyande chasya karmani drishtva meva atmani ishvare. Why have we forgotten Krishna to such an extent? The only reason is because of sinful life. It is because of sinful activities that our forgetfulness from our separation from Krishna has become so strong that we are not feeling any relationship with Krishna. Kshiyande chasya karmani drishtva meva atmani ishvare. That vidyade hriday granthi chidyande sarva samshaya kshiyande chasya karmani drishtva meva atmani ishvare. That hriday granthi, that means that blocking inside our mind which is blocking us away from Krishna. Vidyade hriday granthi, by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam continuously, chidyande sarva samshaya, all the doubts will completely go away. Kshiyande chasya karmani, his activities will get purified. In other words, he will get released himself from the sinful activities. Drishtvam evalpanishwarem, and he will start seeing the supreme soul, super soul, which is situated in the heart, Krishna, the supreme personality of Godhead, and he will get the vision of the supreme Lord. So that is how Vedavyas mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Vidyade hriday granthi chidyande sarva samshaya kshiyande chasya karmani drishtvam evalpanishwarem. So that is what it means, that sinful activities means sinful reactions. That means distress in this material world. No matter which position one is, eventually sinful reactions will catch up. And therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam in the first canto itself tells us that these are the sinful activities which can bring us into more and more into miseries or distress in this world, and it warns us of that.
Just one statement by the washerman and Mother Sita could help you so much. Is there any special benefit of this washerman?
Well, the mention it is like this, that Lord Ramchandra upheld the morality above everything, dharma. He was a dharmiya personality, that he gave too much stress on dharma. In fact, many people have, great sages have actually commented on this, that what Lord Ramchandra has done was a big excess. It should not have done. But Ramchandra's position was, in this appearance as Ramchandra, I will have only one wife, and that was Sita Devi. But for Krishna, there was no such restriction. It was completely free. And Krishna's case, Lord Ramchandra was also, unlike Krishna, if you look into the Ramayana and Bhagavatam, you will find that Ramchandra was not a very diplomatic person. He was always very straight and open about his dealings with people. He never showed any sort of diplomacy in his dealings. But Krishna is different. Krishna has, according to time and circumstances, he can make the law or break the law. Whatever that is justified in Krishna's hands is different. So they are two different nature. In Tridharidam, Ramchandra came and appeared and acted in one particular way. And some devotees have mentioned to Krishna also about this. It's not that this issue was never noted. One devotee asked Krishna about this, that he said to Krishna that he was glorifying Krishna through Srimad Bhagavatam. And he said to Krishna that, why did you do that to when you were Ramchandra? You did this to Sita Devi. What you have done? Maithilyam papavajam garbhinim abhyasim. That Maithili's daughter, which is Sita Devi, you have thrown her away like anything. Krishna said, I didn't do that. Lord Ramchandra has done that. Why you are asking me? He said. That was his answer for that. And immediately after that again, he was glorifying, continuously glorifying, and he said that when Sita was in the forest, that how was Mauli Ratnam, that means the crown in her hair, she handed over to Hanuman to hand it over to Krishna, to Ramchandra. So this devotee was explaining this to Krishna, and the devotee said to Krishna, that when you were Ramachandra, that when Sita Devi handed over that crown to Hanuman, and Hanuman brought that back to you, and as soon as he said, Mauli Ratnam Dadau, and he stopped there, he didn't say, Krishna completed the sentence, Te, he said to me, he has brought it to me, he said. So devotee immediately caught him. He said, when he sent you the crown, you accepted that. But when you throw Sita Devi into the forest, it was Ramchandra, wasn't it? He said to her, Krishna. Krishna had no answer, just smiled. So that is, these pastimes of Krishna and Ramchandra is only for the pleasure of the devotees to understand that Supreme Personality of Godhead is not under our rules and regulations and morals. He is beyond them all that thing, all those things. Whatever they have performed pastimes, it's only for our understanding that this Krishna and Ramchandra is non-different. They are the same person, but appear in two different times, play two different roles, different pastimes, and went back to the spiritual world.
Just like you explained that this Brahma was the same way, was this washerman something else?
Yes, this washerman again comes later on. If you remember, when Krishna went to see Kamsa, there was a washerman story in the Krishna book, you will find. And Krishna says there that when this washerman, after all, this washerman will never change, he said. Then, and that's how he killed him, saying this. He said, this same washerman spoke about me when he was there in Ayodhya earlier. Bad things about me when I was there and Ramchandra. And now I've asked him for some clothes. And what did he answer? He said, this is not meant for you. This is for the king. And he said, the washerman has never changed, he said. And he beat him up there and finished him there itself. I think we'll stop there. It's 10 past. All glory to Srila Prabhupada.
When Lakshmana brought them from the palace at the end, not when during the Vanavasa time.
Ramchandra Manas
is not purely Ramayana. It's a Tulsidas version of the commentary on Ramayana. Ramchandra Manas is original Ramayana is a
I think
you should ask somebody who knows about it. Somebody who knows Ramcharitmanas better, he can answer that.
Not bad. You said there are four different types of marriages.
I can only remember now, Gandharvam, Rakshasam, Brahmam and Vaidigam, I think. I can look at the book and tell you what they are. I'll tell you later. Rakshasam is what Krishna has done to Rukmini. Forcefully kidnapping and taking it away, like the Rakshasas do.
Right.
That type of marriage. Vaidika Vidhi is, you know, the normal way it should be done, with the matching the horoscope and arranging the marriage. That is the traditional old system, Vaidika Vidhi. And then Gandharvam is...
General marriage without any relations.
I think it is the Swayamvaram comes under that category. You know Swayamvaram? Swayamvaram means that all the kings are invited and they sit in a row all over. And the choice is given to the bride with a garland to go and put it on the husband whom she wants to. Like, for example, Arjuna married Draupadi, Draupadi Swayamvaram it was, isn't it? There are a few marriages like that, in that way. Yeah. But I'll give you a complete description of that.
Thank you.
Yeah, I can tell you that. I think the Bhagavatam someone mentioned about it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay. All right, okay. Peter.
Hare Krishna, I'm so sorry.
Are you okay?
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Prabhupada. Jai Vishnupad, Bhavan Subhavar Gajara, Sotra Sat Shri Srimadis Divine Grace, Hare Krishna, Swami Shri Vishnupad Ki Jai.
Jai.
Krishna karma krit
sayukta krishna karma krit
kamanya karma yat pashyet
kamanya karma
karmaya prashya
kamani cha karmaya
kamani cha karmaya
buddhiman manusheshu
buddhiman manusheshu
yukta krishna kamakrit
yukta krishna kamakrit
kamani
kamani
in action
akarma
akarma in action both sounds the same. Two different words.
Yaha. One who.
Pushyat.
Pushyat.
Observe.
Observe.
Akarmani.
Akarmani.
In act. Krishna karma krit.
Krishna karma krit.
Although engaged in all activities.
Although engaged in all activities.
Translation. One who sees inaction, and action in inaction, is intelligent among men, and he is in the transcendental position, although engaged in all sorts of activities. Purport. A person acting in Krishna consciousness is naturally free from the bonds of karma. His activities are all performed for Krishna. Therefore, he does not enjoy or suffer any of the effects of work. Consequently, he is intelligent in human society, even though he is engaged in all sorts of activities for Krishna. Akarma means without reaction to work. The impersonalist ceases fruitive activities out of fear, so that the resultant action may not be a stumbling block on the path of self-realization. But the personalist knows rightly his position as the eternal servitor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, he engages himself in the activities of Krishna consciousness. Because everything is done for Krishna, he enjoys only transcendental happiness in the discharge of his service. Those who are engaged in this process are known to be without desire for personal sense gratification. The ascent of eternal servitorship to Krishna makes one immune to all sorts of reactionary elements of work. Kamanya karma yuk pushyad karmani cha karma yuk buddhiman manusheshu sa yukta krishna karma krit. One who sees inaction and action in inaction is intelligent among men, and he is in the transcendental position, although engaged in all sorts of activities. So, inaction, real inaction, as we explained yesterday, is activity which is without future reaction. And action is all activity which brings future reaction. So although one may be so-called inactive in this material world, he may be seemingly inactive. In other words, he may be sitting still, just like a yogi may be. He still is active in the karmic sense. This instruction is very important because Arjuna thought he was going to avoid the reaction for this battle, and reactions in general, simply by becoming a mendicant and sitting under a tree. If you remember in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna told Krishna, "I will not fight." He looked on the other side of the battlefield and saw all his relatives. He had asked Krishna, "Please, you bring my chariot out into the middle of the battlefield so I may see with whom I must fight." And when Krishna did that, then Arjuna saw his friends, relatives, family members, etc. And he realized, if I kill them, this is going to be very bad. Because killing family members is sinful. Killing anybody is sinful, actually. And when I kill all of these persons, then there are going to be so many widows. And all those widows are going to be unprotected. And therefore, they're going to become varnashankara in the society. All kinds of unwanted progeny, living entities who are taking shelter in the wombs of those who have illicit sex. They are generally of the ghostly class. Coming out of the ghostly class, by Lord Shiva's mercy, they are put into the wombs of those having illicit sex. Therefore, anyone born from illicit sex is no doubt a former ghostly character who simply wanted to make trouble for everybody. Not very nice kind of population in the human society. And today, mostly everybody is like that. Nowadays, mostly everybody is somehow or another that kind of a personality. So Arjuna, he had this, of course, understanding. And he knew that if I destroy this situation where all of these widows are protected, and then I create a situation where they're unprotected, all society will go to hell. I will be the cause of the disturbance of the dynasty tradition. Actually, this is a very important part of Arnasham Dharma, which we generally don't mention too much because people are totally incapable of understanding. But Varnashram Dharma actually creates dynasties, family dynasties. wherein the family has a very wonderful tradition of expertise in a particular department. Nowadays, nobody's expert really at anything. But if he becomes expert at something, it has to be out of great endeavor from the very beginning, learning from the very beginning something new, usually later on in life. Now, in the Vedic society, there were many more expert persons. In fact, everybody was expert at what he did. They didn't require big school traditions, big schools, and everybody go to school, and everybody learn, and everybody get trained up at a job or a factory. Because there was a family tradition in which one was trained from the very beginning of life. They have traditions of carvers, or traditions of launderers, or traditions of drivers, or traditions of farmers, or traditions of all these various sutra traditions. We are aware of dynasties, of course, in terms of the king, where the king has a son and then he becomes the king, etc. Brahmanas also have dynasties, where their children become also great priests, a whole dynasty of priests, great priests in a temple, or great teachers of astrological science. For instance, there are dynasties of astrologers. That's basically how all the good astrologers were in the world. They came from a family of good astrologers. There was one man in Calcutta, probably the best astrologer in the world. He died about 10 years ago. So he was such an expert astrologer, he could immediately tell you a chart without even having to do it. He simply looked at you. He had the secret. He knew the art. But his son, they wanted him to teach him. But he refused. He said, "You are not qualified. You are materialist. You want to use this art for making money. And this degrades the whole family. Therefore, I shall not allow this wonderful science to be degraded by your materialistic consciousness. Therefore, I will die with my secret." So he did. So probably the last great astrologer left his body. Maybe there's one more in the time. So we find that these traditions go on because the family was created with a certain kind of mentality and a certain kind of purity even that made their tradition very, very wonderful. Even amongst the sutras, they kept a certain standard. There was a family standard where in order to become very expert at your particular occupation, you had to maintain a certain standard of action. It is not that in the dynasty of sutras even, everybody could be a drunkard and woman hunter and thief. There are dynasties of thieves also. But they also had a standard. You couldn't be a good thief unless you kept yourself together in a certain way. So, of course, there were not very many dynasties of thieves. But anyway, the point is that when there is this family tradition, there are very nice developments of the skill in that particular dynasty. And one becomes very, very expert. In fact, Prabhupada wanted that in ISKCON we would have great experts in their particular occupation. So expert that they can create others who will also be so expert in their particular occupation. Very expert devotees, Prabhupada wanted. Expert book distributors. Those who knew everything from top to bottom about the science of distributing books. Expert managers. Expert pujaris. Expert cooks. Expert everything. Absolute experts, those who knew their science perfectly well and could thus teach it to others and could thus display wonderful opulences as far as their particular science goes. So, all of these dynasties were there. Of course, Arjuna, he was saying, "I don't want to destroy that dynastic tradition. If I destroy it by killing all of these men, and then the family breaks down, if the family structure breaks down, then there will be loss of the dynasty. Because that dynastic tradition is carried on only because there is that teaching and education within the family. Whereas one grows up in that atmosphere of a particular expertise. And thus, that atmosphere of expertise is carried on life after, generation after generation in the society until one becomes very, very expert. So these dynastic traditions must be there, but Arjuna didn't want to be guilty of destroying that tradition. So he said, "I will not fight. I will not cause that fight to occur. I will go to the forest, and I will sit down under a tree, and I will become a yogi and meditate, a mendicant, renounced person." The tradition of the mendicants are to tradition of the mendicants is to free oneself from the reactions of the material nature in order to, by not acting. This is the mendicant's tradition. They don't want to act in a material way. Therefore, they go in the forest, sit down under a tree, and stop acting in a material way. This is, of course, very useful for those who act in a nonsense way, normally. If one acts in a sinful way, then, of course, the best thing to do is stop acting altogether, in the beginning at least. And that automatically reduces one's load of karma, because he stops making so much reaction. But that's also not the best thing, because one has to free himself from previous reactions. But that's another point that has yet to come. So, to stop all reactions, it is advised that one stop acting in a material way. But how do you do that? You've got a material body. Even if you sit down under a tree somewhere, you're sitting on something. And that something generally causes some living entities to be disturbed or to be killed even. And if you're breathing, the same thing happens. You must drink water. You cannot live without drinking water. Therefore, you also cause reactions in that way. Therefore, those who are yogis, really top-class yogis, their whole business is to give up having to eat or drink, or to sleep or do anything. They just sit themselves in one spot, a very clean spot. They stop all the breathing activities, stop the drinking, of course, and eating, of course, and all other activities. In this way, they come closest to stopping all material activities. And when they are in samadhi, with their mind and consciousness fixed on the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord in the heart, they actually come to the platform of freedom from reaction. But that is very far down the road. Up until that point, or up until the point one is engaged in Krishna's service, one is going to have to become influenced or entangled in reaction, because that's the nature of this world. We've got a body. And the body does things. Even if it's just sitting down somewhere, even if it's just drinking water, or if it's cooking, it makes a fire, so many living entities are destroyed. Or grinding, so many living entities are destroyed. These are called sinful activities. And one has to do kinds of sacrifices in order to free himself from the sinful activities that come from these things. Drinking water, starting a fire, grinding, what to speak of one's own personal activities in various ways. Breathing also creates sinful activities. So therefore, very, very entangling. This world is very entangling. It's not so easy to get out of it. Because everywhere you go, everything you do, somehow creates a reaction which one is going to have to suffer for in the future. Therefore, the way of inaction is very, very difficult to understand, how to become inactive. Arjuna's method was not proper. Krishna is displaying that now. No, it is not correct, Arjuna, that you think you can free yourself from all reactions by no longer acting. That's not possible. Here, you go sit under a tree, that's all right, but you're going to be creating reactions nonetheless. Therefore, there's action in inaction. There's action in inaction because these inactive activities you're performing still create reactions. Whereas, if you act for the sake of the Lord, akarma, akarma nicha karmaya, then that action is real inaction. It is the perfection of what you wanted to be, or is the perfection of what you considered was inaction. The perfection of inaction is action in Krishna consciousness. If one simply acts for the sake of the Supreme Lord, that is the perfection of inaction, because then no longer is there any reaction. No longer any reaction. And then, when one is simply engaged in the service of the Lord this way, only thinking of Krishna, only wanting to act for the sake of Krishna, then he becomes blissful because he's engaged without any concern for reaction, because there's no longer any. And each activity he does is a means of purification. Therefore, all of his actions purify him. And that's wonderful because the living entity is by nature active. Everybody's active. No one can stop doing something, not even for a moment. And if the living entity is restricted artificially from doing something, then it's very disturbing for the living entity. Because his senses still want to act. Although you are restricted, the senses still have desire to act. One who artificially tries to restrict his senses to become inactive, but maintains the taste for activity, then falls down from that platform. While he's on it, he's a pretender. Because it's not so that he's inactive. He's active in the mind. That mind is full of all kinds of desires, all kinds of needs, so he's active in the mind. So when he pretends to be inactive, that's very bad, because he'll fall down from that platform. You cannot remain in that platform forever. What to speak of just simply in the material world pretending to be an inactive person? If you become even a so-called liberated soul, even you climb up to the topmost planet, I mean the topmost platform, and you get up to the Brahman, Paramapadam, the supreme shelter for the Mayavadi class or the impersonalist class, you must fall down again into the material world because of not being properly engaged in Krishna's service. Yushmanangaya, because we avoid the service of the lotus feet of the Lord, even we go to that platform of great advancement, we have to fall down again. Why? Because the living entity cannot maintain himself in an inactive state for long. In the Brahman, it is special. Because there, he is very much shocked in that brilliant effulgence of the Lord. But even that wears off, and then again, the desire for activity is there, and then again, immediately it is fulfilled in terms of gaining a body to act in. So, this material world is like kind of a trap. You can't avoid it, even you go to Brahman. Because as soon as you try to become inactive in order to avoid reaction, even if you go to Brahman, you must come back to activity. So therefore, the rule is activity, not inactivity. The rule is activity, not inactivity. It will always be that way. Activity is the standard in which we judge all occurrences or all situations or all phenomena or all characteristics of this material world. It must be understood from the platform of action. Activity. Now, Arjuna is learning about how activity cannot be stopped but must now be utilized in the service of Krishna. If you act in the service of Krishna, then this kind of activity is very, very nice. And in the next verse, we can discuss how that is so. Yasye sarve, this is text 19. Samarambha kama sankalpa vajita jnanagni dagja karmanam. Samahu panditam Buddha. One is understood to be in full knowledge whose every endeavor is devoid of desire for sense gratification. He is said by sages to be a worker for whom the reactions of work have been burned up by the fire of perfect knowledge. Purport. Only a person in full knowledge can understand the activities of a person in Krishna consciousness. Because the person in Krishna consciousness is devoid of all kinds of sense gratificatory propensities, it is to be understood that he has burned up the reactions of his work by perfect knowledge of his constitutional position as the eternal servitor of the Supreme Personality of God. He is actually learned who has attained to such perfection of knowledge. Development of this knowledge of eternal servitorship to the Lord is compared to fire. Such a fire, once kindled, can burn up all kinds of reactions to work. So, a person in full knowledge is one who doesn't act for the sense gratification. If you act for sense gratification, or whose endeavor is meant for sense gratification, because after all, even a person in full knowledge has to do some activity for maintaining the body, and that also includes eating. That is a sense gratification. You have to eat. But the key word here is the endeavor. One whose samarambha, attempt, his endeavor. One whose endeavors are devoid of the desire for sense gratification. He's in real knowledge. He may also be acting in a way which may seem to have a goal of sense gratification. He has to eat. Everybody has to eat. He has to do things for the sake of the body. That's all right. But the endeavor that he makes is not for gaining sense gratification. It's for serving Krishna. And by the way, so many things which might be very pleasing to the body may come to him. It's like that famous Avadhuta, this special Paramahamsa, who was performing the special yoga process, this Kriya process of simply laying down. This is just like the path of the python, laying down by the side of the road and doing nothing, engaged in no way. But Pralhad Maharaj came and wanted to know how it was, although he's laying down here on the side of the road. He's so chubby. But how is it you're so chubby? You're not doing anything in particular. He says, but sometimes, the answer was, sometimes somebody comes and feeds me a big feast, so I'll take it. Sometimes they come and pass urine on me. Sometimes I sleep just here under the stars. And sometimes they put me in a golden bed. I accept whatever comes to me. Because, after all, it is simply the arrangement of the Supreme. According to my past karma, I am enjoying happiness and distress. So why should I endeavor? Actually, he's not endeavoring. But he's getting anyway. When he's being fed a feast and laying on the golden bed, certainly there must be some sense gratification there. But he's not acting for sense gratification. He's not acting, period. People are just coming and doing things for him. He's thus burning off his previous reaction. Great saintly persons, they thought like that. By enjoying, but not endeavoring to enjoy. Or by suffering, but not endeavoring to suffer. One will burn off the stock of accumulated karma. Sometimes some foolish person will say, well, if it is my karma to enjoy, then I must go out and endeavor to gain enjoyment. Because it is, after all, my karma. But that's a false idea. Because as soon as endeavor is involved, then immediately there's creation of future happinesses and distresses. As soon as you start endeavoring, then comes the consideration of including more. It does not diminish the past stock. It creates more stock. Therefore, the proper way of saying it, if one wanted to speak like this, is, I shall enjoy or suffer that which is my lot without making any endeavor to enjoy it or suffer. Simply, I shall keep myself in some so-called neutral position. This is very hard to do. But that person who was laying there, that saintly person, because he was always thinking of Krishna, he was in the akarma state. But he was thinking, anyway, I am in a neutral position. I'm not endeavoring for any happiness or distress. But it will come to me because of past karma. And it will be used up accordingly in due course of time. And then when all of those karmic reactions have run their course and they're finished, then I will leave this body and go back to where my proper destination, according to my development of consciousness. According to what I have attained, at that point, when the karma runs out, we call it like the fan. When the fan is in the wall, it's like being attached to the karma, and it's running with power. But when you pull the plug out, the fan is still moving. So when the fan of karma gradually comes to a halt, when the momentum is finished, at that point, one leaves his body and attains whatever state he has earned according to the advancement of his particular consciousness. So, the living entity in that way frees himself from the material world by getting rid of all of the previous reactions in that way. But this means one has to act without concern for happiness or distress. In order to do that, you must have knowledge. You must have knowledge, and that knowledge brings about a certain kind of faith. Because after all, if you don't have some faith in the knowledge, you'll not be able to just simply stop acting, or endeavoring rather, you can't stop acting, or endeavoring for sense gratification. If one knows it'll come anyway due to karma, then, and he has faith in that, then he will stop acting for sense gratification. But if he has no faith in that, then how can he do it? So therefore, real knowledge means real fixed up understanding, the realization. That's a faith. Real faith means a realization. You have the realization that I'm going to have to get happiness or distress according to my karma anyway. Therefore, I should not endeavor in any particular way simply for sense gratification. Because after all, I'm going to get these things anyway. But one has to be fixed up in that understanding. If one is not fixed up in that understanding, then when he sees himself not working and he sees the whole world running him by, you know, the whole world is running very fast for sense gratification, moving very fast, cars moving, trains moving, planes moving, spaceships moving, everybody speaking so many things, working so hard, he thinks, this is the way to get sense gratification. If I follow in the path of the fruit of worker, the karmi, then by my activities I will get results. And I will enjoy or I will enjoy these results. I will not suffer them. I will enjoy these results. But this understanding is false. I am getting my happiness anyway, in due course of time. Happiness in respect to the senses is coming automatically in due course of time, as soon as you are in a body, simply because of the higher arrangement of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Daiva, the energy of the Supreme. In this case, it's the external energy of the Lord that is run by the Supersoul. So by Daiva, or higher energy, it will anyway be shown that you will get your happiness. So therefore, yathādukkhamayatnatah, you will also get distress in due course of time. Distressful conditions will also come. Therefore, why should one have to struggle so much to avoid distress and get happiness? These things anyway are coming in due course of time. Therefore, if one has some firm realization, he does not act for sense gratification, because it will come anyway. You'll get it anyway, don't worry. But if you act for sense gratification, you're going to not only get the happiness and distress you formerly earned, but you're going to earn more and get stuck in the material world and unable to get out. It's just like if you're in quicksand. You know this stuff, quicksand? If you struggle, you're going to sink faster. If you don't struggle, you're going to sink anyway, because that's the nature of quicksand. You're just going to sink to the bottom level of the thing anyway, no matter what, because that's the way it is. Once you're in it, you're stuck. Finished. That's all. Goodbye. Wave goodbye to your friends and family. Don't be disturbed. Don't struggle, because you're going to sink anyway. But if you struggle, you're going to sink faster, like a heavier weight. The struggle makes a heavier weight. So if you just live out your life without struggling, with getting fruit of results, then you sink in the material sense. In other words, you're gaining all material sense enjoyments and sufferings anyway. But if you struggle to gain, then you get more and more reactions. It makes you heavier and heavier, and then you really sink in the material world very fast. So one should avoid having to struggle in this sense. But here it is said that one who's got this faith and realization, he is said by the sages to be a worker for whom the reactions of work have been burned up by the fire of perfect knowledge. Not only do you free yourself from having to create future reactions, but you burn up previous reactions as well. This methodology of working without fruit of desire is so nice that you even burn up previous reactions. One has become so intelligent by this endeavor that he burns up previous reactions as well. Of course, you could say, that the mosquito will bite you because of previous reaction. And just sit there and let him bite you. You could do that, of course. But of course, that also is very difficult. But for us who are engaged in Krishna's service, we act simply for the sake of Krishna. We act for the sake of Krishna. We act for the sake of pleasing Krishna, and therefore all the previous reactions of all activities disappear. They're burned up in the fire of perfect knowledge. Therefore, check text 1. Chakva karma Palasangam Nityachipto Nirashaya Karmanya Abhi Pravittopi Nayava Kinchit Kuroti So. Abandoning all attachment to the results of his activities, ever satisfied and independent, he performs no fruitive actions, although engaged in all kinds of undertakings. This is what we just mentioned. Purport. This freedom from the bondage of action is possible only in Krishna consciousness, when one is doing everything for Krishna. A Krishna conscious person acts out of pure love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore he has no attraction for the results of the action. He is not even attached to his personal maintenance, for everything is left to Krishna. Nor is he anxious to secure things, nor to protect things already in his possession. He does his duty to the best of his ability and leaves everything to Krishna. Such an unattached person is always free from the resultant reactions of good and bad. It is as though he were not doing anything. This is the sign of a karma, or actions without fruit of reaction. Any other action, therefore, devoid of Krishna consciousness, is binding upon the worker. And that is the real aspect of vikarma, as explained herein before. So, if one is detached from the result of his activities, and always satisfied in all circumstances, even though sometimes he may gain bad, but anyway, that is the nature of this world. Or he gains good, anyway, that is also the nature of this world. He's not attached to happiness or distress. He's not attached to good or bad, or detached from either. He's always happily engaged in Krishna's service, because that is the main point. Just like when one is engaged in Krishna's service, there may be sometimes disturbing conditions which he has to undergo. It's like if you're distributing books, it's certainly in the rain, sometimes disturbing. But even though one's in the rain or snow, it can become very ecstatic. In fact, the disturbing condition actually sometimes becomes an impetus for ecstasy to develop. Now here you are out in the middle of hell, distributing, and Vaikuntha is there. That is possible when one is detached and independent and satisfied. Independence means he's not dependent on the external circumstance. If he's in heaven or hell, he's not in any way affected. Vaga pavaga narakeshu apipuyasya darshanam. He is seeing heaven or hell equally, because in any case, it's simply earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego. Huh? It's just that some of it is manifesting in a way with nice temperature, nice breezes, nice smells. But all these things, what are they? They're just attracting your senses. Whereas in hell, there's not nice breezes, not nice smells, maybe cold breezes, disturbing breezes, bad smells, bad sights, bad sound. But still, it's just a combination of things which are sense gratificatory. Of course, if one wants to develop spiritual consciousness, he must avoid hellish things. Otherwise, they will drag his consciousness down. Similarly, he should avoid heavenly things, because they will also drag his consciousness down, because one will become attached in either sense. So therefore, for a devotee, svarga pavarga narakeshu, wherever he is, heavenly planets, lower planets, in hell, it is the same. Apitu yasya darshanam, he sees it equally. His vision is equal, because for him, in any place, it is equally hard to be Krishna conscious. If you're in hell, it's hard because you're disturbed. If you're in heaven, it's hard because you're disturbed. You're in heaven disturbed by all the nice sense gratification. In hell, you're disturbed by the pain. But the disturbance is equal. From the Krishna conscious point of view, this material world has a lump sum of disturbance which goes along with it, and you can't avoid it wherever you are, one place or another place. Disturbance is disturbance is disturbance. If you're disturbed in the body, then the mental disturbances don't bother you so much, because you can't think of them. You're so busy in pain. And if you're freed from pain, then the mental disturbances come. Huh? Or from the Krishna conscious point of view, can you imagine if you're just simply engaged in sense gratification, having unlimited sex life and eating wonderful food, girls peeling grapes and pouring them in your mouth? This is even worse. Because you'll never remember Krishna then. You'll forget Krishna immediately. Therefore, that's worse than hell. Because in hell, you remember Krishna. But in the heavenly planet, you won't remember Krishna, because you'll be busy enjoying your body. So therefore, practically, the heaven is hell for a devotee. So if heaven is hell, what's the difference if you're in heaven or hell? So as long as one is in hell, best thing is to go on chanting Hare Krishna and distributing Prabhupada's book. In this way, hell becomes heaven. But not the kind of heaven wherein one is attached. It becomes Vaikuntha. Actually, hell becomes Vaikuntha. How is that possible? Anything's possible when one is actually simply engaged in Krishna's service. Now, it is stated that a person who is in Krishna consciousness is not anxious to secure things, neither to protect things already in his possession. He does his duty to the best of his ability and leaves everything to Krishna. Well, that's a pretty big order. Then one should not, for instance, endeavor to protect anything. But why are we doing it? Endeavoring to make sure nobody steals all the books or the Lakshmi from Krishna. Because, first of all, if we are in a society where there is a mixture of some who are detached and some who are attached, those who are attached will always be the cause of the destruction of those who are detached, unless arrangement is made. Therefore, you may find if there is something wrong that cannot be properly done simply because devotees cannot do it, then when somebody comes to find out that wrong thing, he will only find it out from one who is attached. That person will always be the cause of giving away the secret. You know, just like in the communist countries. When there are devotees who are detached, they never are the cause of turning anybody else in. But one who is attached is always the cause, because he's always so afraid if a police comes and says, okay, who is engaged in this God business? He immediately goes, this one. So therefore, arrangement has to be made by those who are detached to protect the whole society, including those who are attached, from the attached ones, by making a perfect arrangement so that everyone can be protected. Therefore, in ISKCON, although it may seem to be a contradictory principle, we are having to do this because there is a mixture of the detached and attached in the same society. Understand? Simple point. Because the attached live with the detached have to protect the attached from themselves and to protect the detached from the attached too. Therefore, we engage ourselves in managerial principles to protect this movement and to protect the devotees in this movement. Although, if there is simply a society of Paramahamsas, we wouldn't even have to bother doing that. Everything would be perfectly taken care of by the Supreme Personality of God. Still, there must be arrangements, because you're dealing with the material world. All of Lord Caitanya Mahaprabhu's associates were certainly liberated souls. But when they traveled from Bengal to Jagannath Puri every year, Shivananda Sen had to take charge of the group, to pay all the tolls, and to make sure the customs agents did not cause trouble, and to arrange lodging at night, and to arrange food for the whole crew as they walked down to Jagannath Puri. It used to take a long time, a month or something like that, many days. It's a long walk. So, therefore, even in the society of liberated souls, there are certain material necessities of life which must be gotten, and therefore one must endeavor. It is not that you can just be a pure devotee of Krishna and just sit under a tree chanting Hare Krishna, and then everything will come to you. Maybe it will not come to you. Maybe you will fast for a few days or a week or so before somebody even catches on that you're not eating and feeds you. Therefore, to be really detached like this is not simply a question of sitting somewhere and chanting Hare Krishna. One has to be ready to fast for a week. You ready to fast for a week? No. Therefore, we go to the store, buy the prasadam, prepare to offer it to Krishna. Because we are not going to place Krishna in a circumstance where he has to take care of us because we are too foolish to do it, or we don't want to do it. Krishna will. He will supply you. But then you will not do your service for Krishna, which is to spread Krishna consciousness movement all over the world. So because we have a goal to achieve, we endeavor in that way, and that endeavor means we take care of ourselves to a certain extent. But we do not over-endeavor in this regard. We simply act as is necessary in order to keep body and soul together and go on spreading Krishna consciousness movement and arrange things nicely, and then Krishna helps. He supports and carries on this mission in a very nice way so that Krishna consciousness will go on very strongly all over the world. So we should always act in that way, without desire for fruit or results. And then we'll always be free from the resultant reactions of good and bad. Are there any questions?
Yes. When good and bad happens to us when we're performing our services, is that because of our previous karma? For instance, if a demon comes up and...
That may be because of our present requirement. There are many ways to look at it. First of all, everything occurs due to the previous karma. You certainly have enough of it, no? So, that karma is there, but you also require to get beaten in the nose. Because that morning you woke up thinking, who needs Krishna anyway? I'm God, I can do everything myself, I'm so great. And the first person you meet walked over your head. So this is Krishna's way of saying, you don't need me? Okay, take that. That happens. That happens. One time there was one devotee who one day said, I don't need Krishna. And that very day he got smashed in the face. Actually a very great devotee. I don't want to tell you his name. But one day he just joined the movement. Actually he hadn't just joined the movement. He was about to join the movement. And he was, that evening before, this all happened in Copenhagen. This was about 15 years ago. He was, that evening before, he was at one program, chanting Hare Krishna. And he hadn't decided yet to become a devotee. But he was thinking, well, I don't need to be a devotee. I don't need Krishna. I can do all this without Krishna. And the next morning he got up, walked out on the street, and the first person he met hit him right in the nose, and he fell right on the ground, bleeding. He immediately picked himself up and went to the temple and said, I'm doing this. Because he knew exactly why he got beat in the nose. Krishna arranges like that. When you need, you get. Therefore, tatte nukam paatam shushama kshamana bhuntane vatma kutam vitakam hridhaya gavapiya vidinam namaste jivetiyo mukti padesa daiva. When one is suffering these past reactions, he knows... How do you know that's a clean cup? How do you know? Right. Anyway, there's still water on this one. So one acts with the desire. He acts with the desire to serve Krishna. So he knows that I have so many future past reactions, and these past reactions will come to me in due course of time, and they will cause me trouble. Therefore, I should simply engage myself in Krishna's service, thinking that all these reactions are coming to my due to my past reactivities, simple activities. Therefore, I will suffer my lot, and in the future, I will be freed from these reactions and go back home back to God. Any questions?
See, it's a bird trying to stay around the cycle. Oh, that would be nice to do that. Then it said that the snake is trapping you now. But one had to perform this action, eh? Can you see something like that?
Where did you get that from?
Okay.
It is said by who? Somebody.
Proper definition.
This is not. You can see a bird and you can say, oh, that's nice to do that. You can see a flower and say, oh, that's very beautiful. That does not plant a seed. If you then start, you know, going to Maharishi's flying school, that plants seeds. As soon as you go, and you have to, and you start endeavoring to do that, that very willing to endeavor is the planting of seeds. Even before you have endeavored, you have willed, I'm going to do that now. I'm going to actually learn how to do that. That's the seed. But if you simply say, I'll bet you that's fun, flying around the sky like that, that's not fun in the seed. It's a statement of fact. It is fun. The birds have a great time. Sure. They're all just, you know, zooming all around. They love it. Especially they take the ferry, you know, from Copenhagen to Malmo. They take the ferry all the time. They just hook up to the back of the ferry and they're just flying in the sky on the wind. They never flap their wings even almost. There was a couple of birds, there were about 50 or 60 birds doing this, but a couple of them never even flapped their wings. They were so expert, they just floated across the whole way. And they were so blissful in bird sense gratification. You see the birds doing loop-de-loops and flying here and there. The birds play games with the cars, although it's a deadly game. As the cars drive down the road, the bird flies right under the car. His sense gratification is to get past that car before the car runs him over. Sometimes the car runs him over. Even people do that with their motorcycles and things. So they're enjoying their bird sense gratification in that way. That does not mean simply because you say they're enjoying, I'll bet you that's fun. But now you have to be a bird. You know? But if you're thinking, I'll bet you that's fun, I'm going to do that too. I'm going to go to one of these flying courses. That willing plants the seed. As long as you don't endeavor for sense gratification,